Welcome to the Educause podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Real Networks and features a session from the Educause 2008 annual conference. Participants include Naomi R. Boyer, Assistant Vice President of Extended University and International Affairs at the University of South Florida, Kevin Calkins, Director of Institutional Research and Effectiveness Programming at USF Polytechnic within the University of South Florida, Karen Conrath, Director of Instructional and Media Services at USF Polytechnic, University of South Florida, and Catherine Lavallee-Welsh, Associate Librarian at the University of South Florida. The session is entitled Sustainable Faculty Technology Development to Facilitate a New University Culture.
Welcome to this session. This session is the Sustainable Faculty Technology Development to Facilitate a New University Culture. And I've been asked to remind you that the evaluations are online, and if you would please fill those out. I appreciate you being here first thing this morning. 3 years ago, we developed the Faculty Integration Technology Institute to help faculty integrate technology into their teaching and learning. And it's our pleasure this morning to be able to share with you our experiences and also talk to you about how we've been able to sustain that development through learning commons or communities as well as a peer mentoring program. As far as introductions, I am Kevin Calkins. I'm the Director of Institutional Research, Effectiveness and Planning, and my unit is responsible for enrollment management, decision support, and institutional effectiveness. Dr. Naomi Boyer is our Associate Vice President of Extended University and International Affairs. Naomi lives and breathes technology integration, facilitating both faculty and students in the appropriate platforms necessary to maximize technology integration. Karen Conrath, she is our Director of Media Services. Karen provides technology support to campus faculty, students, and staff in the smart classrooms and distant learning delivery technologies. And Catherine Lavallee-Welsh is our Associate Librarian. Catherine has developed our library from scratch, and she has been instrumental also in helping us to move us into the virtual library age through her knowledge and development of information literacy. So with that, let me tell you a little bit about us. We're part of a four-campus system of the University of South Florida. USF Polytechnic is the only state's polytechnic university. Our polytechnic model places a premium on active applied learning and applied research. Our last full academic year, we had 3,448 students, and we currently have 39 full-time faculty. Because of USF Polytechnic's geographical location, being at the epicenter of the Florida high-tech corridor, the polytechnic model is ideal for delivering the undergraduate and graduate programs that fit with the economic development of our region. And our region is a very growing region. Right now we have about 8.5 million people, or actually more than 8.5 million people, living within a 100-mile radius of our campus. And with that, Naomi.
Good morning, everyone. I'm a little surprised to see everybody here at 8:10 in the morning, so bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. And this is, after all, a thrilling Thursday that we're working on today. That's my word for today. I'm really pleased to be able to be here with you all. FTII, as we'll segment it for you, what we're going to be talking about today, it has been very exciting for us because we've been able to see some real change in our faculty overall. I'm going to go over the specifics of the program for you and talk about the program, but one of the very most exciting things to me about this program is that it is not just the Teaching and Learning Center that works on this program. Having Kevin, Catherine, and Karen here with me is because this is a joint delivery model that includes all of our campus support units so that the information that they need to share and the development opportunities they need to provide are integrated into the experience. And it's through that collaboration that we've been able to build such a strong, what I think is a very strong program. So with that, hang on, let me get my little clicker. They're making me use this microphone. I kind of prefer to move around, but I'll stay here because they're making me. We started with a blank slate. We are a small campus, and as such, we didn't have any sort of development program for the faculty. And so to begin, we wanted to make sure that the program was based on national standards. So we used the National Staff Development Council standards. And Florida has a professional development protocol that's been legislated for K-12 schools. As a reviewer for that, I understood the basic platform of that protocol and was able to break it down into the segments to make sure that what we put into place dealt with all aspects of professional development that need to be taken care of. Too often, I think, in higher ed, we do the spray and pray approach. We hope that someone, we do the workshops, and we hope that someone's going to go out and use the information we've given them. And unfortunately, it's really hard to evaluate, then, the success and the impact of those workshops on the student learning. And so we've attempted to link all of that together. The FTII program is completely voluntary. Faculty are not forced to participate. No one tells them, you need to do this. However, we have seen significant pressure within departments for faculty to participate. So it's more of a peer pressure at this point than it is any administration saying, you have to do this now. When we started, we funded 15 slots, and the resources that go into this are to support the incentives. We try to make the faculty feel very special when they're a part of the program. They're given a whole whopping $500 stipend. They start off with, after our summer offerings, they get $250, and then after the end of the year, they get another $250. So it's not as if there's a whole bunch of money that's built behind this thing. They do have access to specialty software. They have access to ongoing learning opportunities. They have access to some hardware, more like headsets, webcams, things like that. But they're not being given buckets of money to do this. So a lot of it involves a personal choice. One other thing, we have our faculty, and then we have instructional administrators as well. And everyone is encouraged to apply that works and teaches with students. So we've had not only faculty in the program, but we've had some of our full-time administrators who also teach who have chosen to participate. The components of the program, the first segment of it is a 5-day intensive. And the first time we went through, we did a 3-day intensive. Wasn't enough. And they walked out of there like, I'm so full of information, I don't know what to do with it now. So based on the first year's guidance and feedback, they said 3 days is not enough. So we then moved to 5 days the second year. And in the second year, we had 3 days and 2 days. They said, okay, it's too much at once, let's spread it out more. So this last year, we did a two-day, and a 1-day, and that seemed to work pretty well. Of course, now we're extending it over 3 weeks, and we know how valuable faculty time is. So trying to figure out the best schedule for getting it in there is really difficult. We focused on summer offerings, and we try to wait until our summer classes, the majority of our summer classes are over. So it's before the fall semester starts. And at the end of summer classes, trying to find the most opportune time. But one of the things that I've definitely learned is you're not going to make all the faculty happy. So trying to find the best time. Sometime in the spring, I usually send out an email to the faculty saying, tell me if you're intending to participate. Are you interested in working with us? And I then use that group that responds back to me as my scheduling focus group. And I work with them to make sure that whenever I schedule it, it's based on their needs. And then others that want to join are welcome to join after that. After the 5-day institute, we have monthly meetings. And those monthly meetings are more learning community meetings. The faculty come with whatever they've implemented during that month and share what they've learned, the challenges. Every now and then I'll throw in a topic to discuss research or something else that we need to take a look at. But they run the meeting. And after our summer session this time, they said, well, are you going to give us an agenda every month of exactly what we're going to cover in the time we're with you? And I say, sorry, no, that's not the way it works. It's a very productive 2 hours, and it's probably the only time that they have where they really sit down and share learning, how they're using the technology, how to think about things. Because so often we have stuff to get done that we don't think and process and reflect together. And so the purpose of those meetings is to support one another through the process of learning. And the feedback I've received is that it's been very successful. The first group that went through during year one asked if they could continue with year two. So year one's group joined year two. Year one and two said, can we continue on to year three? So now we've got 3 years' worth of people working together and joining for the learning community meetings and sharing with one another. Also, as part of the delivery model, because we have delivery. Go back a second. The four categories of the Florida Professional Development System is that you have your planning, which everyone, that's your needs assessment, that's gathering your data, that's the collaboration to put your sessions together, that's thinking of the topics. You have delivery, which should be based on adult learning practices, andragogy, reflection, practice, building those learning communities. You have follow-up, which is your mentoring and your coaching, your ongoing meetings, your implementation, your reflection, your continued reflection and processing. And then the evaluation and assessing whether it's successful. And I'll get into the evaluative component in just a little bit. At the end of each semester, each faculty member is asked to complete an implementation reflection. And they're asked to submit that in hard copy. And it's wonderful, rich data that then tells me what they're doing and what they're not. Because when a faculty member applies to the program, they commit to participate in the learning community meetings, they commit to participate in that 5-day learning experience, they commit to implementing at least one new technology a semester, and they commit to providing us with feedback as we go. They also work with that mentor. You notice mentorship up there. And my previous year's participants serve as those peer mentors for those incoming participants. That's been really useful because we are small, so they can run down the hallway and say, hey, how do you do this? Or what do you think of that? Or I ran into this with my students today. And so that's been really useful for the faculty to be able to have an assigned peer mentor when it comes to the technology. And that last piece is a part of our evaluation component. And this is what I think makes us a little different. As faculty come into that 5-day institute, we start talking about how we can assess student learning. And while a number of our faculty are in tenure and promotion, and many of them are very nervous because programs like this tend not to help their tenure cases as a research-worn institution, we've had to build in some sort of research component that says, how will what I'm doing in my classroom and teaching impact student learning? So we ask the faculty members, either in groups or individually, to take a look at what they're using and how it impacts student learning. Really trying to make a connection between what we're offering through professional development and the student learning outcomes. And it's been really exciting to see some of the work. I've had faculty members who came in, let's say information technology. And the information technology faculty are very interesting because you would really expect them to be very advanced in their technology capacity, which of course they are when it comes to programming and networks and all of those things. When you start talking instructional technology, you want me to do what? It's a whole new concept for them. But I have faculty members in IT that have taken their entire research strain and turned it over to computer education. So how can I best teach programming? How can we best reach these students in different ways? And that's very exciting to see them come in touch, get into touch with how can we impact learning through the things we're doing in the classroom. Okay, I mentioned our 5-day, intensive experience. We have presentations by many units, and my co-presenters here are just some of the individuals that actually present with us. We take the needs assessment information, and I send the data out to everyone who's participating, and we then come up with a program for that group's applicants. We have offered your basic sessions. We're a Blackboard user, so we go through the Blackboard motions. We use SoftChalk, Camtasia, Illuminate. So we go through the basic, software, click here kinds of stuff. But we've also included a piece with institutional research and effectiveness, and they come in and talk about online surveying and things they need to think about in creating surveys. Our librarian does a fantastic job of providing referencing and things to think about for tenure and promotion, or things to think, data searches for our instructors. And Media Services comes in and works with them on video conferencing, movies. Our IT group comes in and talks with them about security issues. But the topics we come up with are all based upon a needs assessment that we have them complete as part of their application. And that needs assessment will ask them on their current knowledge, where they're at. And then we list a whole bunch of topics. Would you be interested in? Or do you know nothing about? And the ones that they say no, they know nothing about, we kind of target some of those as an opportunity to provide some instruction on. We've brought in some vendors and partners. We are standardized with CPS, so we've brought e-instruction in to do some training with them during those 5 days. Smart Boards, Smart Technologies has come in and done some educational experiences for them. If we've worked with our general counsel to come in and talk about copyright and intellectual property. We've tried to bring in as many people to the experience as possible, because when it becomes just about the technology, we lose them, and it's really hard to integrate it into the rest of what they're learning and knowing and what they need to do in the world of instruction. Okay, let me tell you a little bit about who our participants are. We now are at 28. It doesn't sound like high numbers, but in a total faculty of 40, it's fairly significant. Keep in mind, they're all voluntary. And the pressure is getting pretty intense in those departments where folks have not chosen to participate. So next year I'm expecting that the margin of those who are not are going to get smaller and smaller. If you notice underneath where it says arts and sciences and then it tells you M3, F4.5, that's how many faculty we have in that area. So we have a total of 7.5, and 6 of the 7.5 have participated. The first year we had 1 male, which was very interesting. So we had 8 women and 1 male, an IT faculty member who was really trying to be a little innovative and got in there. And then that IT faculty member went back and sold more IT faculty members. We saw more of my largest group in year 2 was my education faculty, which is really interesting because many of my education faculty are elementary educators, and so they are rather traditional in some of their approaches. They were not real comfortable with the technology. You'll hear one of the faculty members later when we start telling you, sharing the case study, but for some of them, it was a really big deal to use a flash drive, And then we have that same person in with somebody who's an IT faculty member and knows everything about programming and artificial intelligence. And so it was a very interesting dichotomy when you get all of those people in the same room. And by the way, I am completely open to questions as we go along. If anybody has something that they want to question, or just raise your hand. Okay, so I mentioned the needs assessment, and this is where we are at this point in time. So general technology skills. The self-rating came from the needs assessment. And then external observation is from what we know, knowing those faculty and working with them all along. Notice how just a few of them will admit that they have limited knowledge, but I know when they have a hard time attaching something to an email, we're rather a basic learner when it comes to some of these things. Few of them rated themselves higher in extensive knowledge, but that's, you know, a nice recurve there, I think, when we take a look at it. Okay, here's our learning objectives. I don't need to read the slides to you. Yes. We actually have the entire, all the slides posted online, and I'll put them in the EDUCAUSE presenter notes as well. The question was, are the notes available for this? And they will be online, they are online in EDUCAUSE, but at the end we're also giving you a website where they're posted out on the web on our website. So yes, they'll be available. This last one kind of goes to that action research. You know, being able to present, publish, and communicate with peers about the topic. Okay, so, yes, ma'am.
Did you say that they needed to implement one new technology every year or every semester?
The question was, do the faculty need to commit to implementing one new technology a year or a semester? And the answer to that is one new a semester. So each semester, they need to be implementing something new. And it's usually, I have not seen a single one that just takes one thing and does it one semester. It tends to be a combination, and it may, they may attempt to do five new things in the first semester, and they need the rest of the next semester to master that. So it's not an easy just one and one when the reflections come back to me. Okay, so the blue lines are their pre, where they started before, and the red lines are the post. Obviously, everyone was, you know, fairly familiar with Blackboard, but those numbers are a little bit deceiving because the pre on Blackboard, you know, maybe going in and posting a syllabus is very different than going in and using discussion boards or, you know, using the assignments and getting into more of the depth of the tools. So when you go in, and, you know, if it was just going in and doing, we have e-grades, which is as far as all of our faculty have to submit their grades via Blackboard. And so the difference in how they were using it. So while we started at 16 people using Blackboard before, and I think it's 20 afterwards, that's not a big jump. But you have to look into the quality of what they're doing and how they're doing it. And there's definitely a significant difference in the types of things they're doing between those different things. Camtasia, my column that says I have no clue what this is, lots of check marks on that in the needs assessment, and they're going crazy now. They're a little too Camtasia crazy. I have to keep telling them, I don't want hour videos. You know, I don't want you sitting and lecturing for an hour to students online or anywhere else for that matter. So, I mean, a lot of them are using Camtasia and to do a lot of different things with. They're creating instructional videos now. I have face-to-face faculty who are creating instructional videos so they can use face-to-face time for activities and hands-on sorts of things. We have a large online development project where they're creating short videos and putting them into instructional modules. I have faculty who, I have my accounting faculty who do work problems, and so they'll use a tablet and work out the problems and do videos of problem-solving tutorials and exercises. So we have a lot of different kinds of things we're doing with the video. The online survey tools, and that's Kevin's the one over there that has them moving on that. They started with 7. That had some sense of those tools, and we had 9 at the end. Although, I need to clarify something here. The needs assessment asked them specifically about Blackboard and Camtasia. We didn't necessarily say, do you use online survey tools? We said, are you interested in, and how much do you know about? with the survey tools. So we saw, even though we saw the 7 indicates the interest level, 9's the implementation, because we can go into our survey tools and count how many of them have actually implemented the surveys. And I think the numbers on the implementation might actually be a little bit higher when we're talking about some of the survey tools. And then we have the online assessment. Boy, do they start getting respondents happy once they figure out that it's out there. So they really, you know, they're using it for testing and quizzing and doing some other things like that. And notice that one went down a little bit. They really thought this was going to be a wonderful thing. Oh, I can do essay exams and it's going to grade it all by itself. Oops, not quite. You know, because I think when they don't quite understand the tools, they think they're going to be very interested in it. It's going to be something that's going to be wonderful. And then you realize that there's limitations to all of these technology tools that we're talking about. And it doesn't fit for everything. And it doesn't fit for everyone. And we have to be able to, part of what we work with them on is it's not about the technology. It's about what you want to teach, but how you want your students to learn. And then we can help you integrate the technology into that to make it meaningful. Okay, so we worked on webcasts with them. We talk about educational research, and that's that action research. And you know, it's really difficult for some of my empirical researchers to start looking at some of these educational interventions because, you know, it's, well, I can't isolate these skills. We're doing lots of things. They're reading their textbook, and I'm doing this. So how do I isolate that? So getting them to think in an iterative process of looking at perhaps a system of implementation to determine what's working for them and what's not is new for many of them, even though some of them are very accomplished researchers. We do blogs and wikis and some other Web 2.0 tools and integrate that. And the numbers after them are the number of faculty that showed an interest in those areas before the sessions. Soft chalk modules, we're building online modules. We have a large push, as I'm sure many of your universities do, to build more online courses and online programs. Smart podiums, that one's very interesting because we had a brand new building open at the same time that this program kicked off. And before that, we were reeling the projector carts into the classroom and checking all that stuff out. Well, then we had the projectors in the ceiling and the podiums, the smart podiums with the Crestrons, and that was a big, scary world to them. So getting everybody acclimated to that was really important. And student response systems and smart boards. Okay, I'm going to turn it over to Karen here, and she's going to take you through some case studies and walk you through the some of what we hear from the faculty.
Hi. We all decided instead of writing a bunch of testimonials up here for you to look at from their reflections at the end of the time that they spent in this FTII, we decided to let you listen to them tell their stories.
I was one of the first members of FTII because I really like technology, and I think that in involving students in technology is good. I think that using technology in classrooms is great. I mean, in engineering especially, where the world is technologically advanced. So I learned how to make videos with Camtasia. I learned and increased knowledge on Blackboard because I was still kind of a novice. I learned how to do wikis and blogs and discussion groups, and I can't even name all of them. I continued to participate as a mentor because I felt it was critically important to be able to provide that help to faculty in the same position as I, keeping in mind that we're immigrants, people my age, to technology, and the students that we teach are natives to technology. They, you know, they grow up with it. So what I've done is I've instilled it in my classes, not only classes that I teach face-to-face, and there's a Blackboard component to it, but I've been doing online classes. So with the online classes, I rarely and face-to-face with a student only by accident if they happen to come in to see me. But we have many ways that we can communicate, and I've started doing the synchronous Illuminate sessions as my office hours so that the students have my availability during that time period. We do Illuminate sessions to review lessons that are maybe a little tougher than others. I've used Illuminate to go over problems when I do a statistics class to show them carefully how to do the problems and then to answer their questions. We do Illuminate for all our pre-study for exams. So every time that the students have an exam, they will have a pre-study time the night before the exam starts, and then we get their questions answered. I tell them the format of the exam, and they're more prepared for it.
We had a wide range of people attending FTII, certainly in the session I was in. And the nice thing about it is people who already know something about technology, they're going to gain something. They're going to gain some depth. They're going to be urged to look at things they hadn't considered and which they may look at and say, hey, that's not bad. That's better than what I'm using now. Or it can be used in conjunction with what I'm using now. People who have never had any exposure, have never really used instructional technology in their classroom, well, this is certainly a great deal of help for them because it's going to bring them up to a level where they can use this stuff and they can see the benefits of it. Will they use every bit of it right off the bat? No, they'll pick one or two tools and they'll use it, and their success in that will encourage them to go on from there and add more. One of the interesting things about it is that it is, in a sense, a great equalizer going to one of these sessions because you have people who already know a lot about it. You have people who know almost nothing about it. And you put them in one of these sessions, the person who knew a lot is still going to know more at the end of it. The person who didn't know anything is going to catch up a lot. So they're going to be closer in terms of their level of understanding at the end of one of these sessions, and they are at least going to be able to communicate and exchange ideas.
Whenever we had opportunity to join the FTII about 3 years ago, I was especially motivated because I've taught teacher education for years, and I keep wanting to improve, and especially with so much technology available and with the young people being so intrigued with the technology and so proficient themselves, I knew I had to keep up with the young people. I also knew that the more technology I could integrate into my classroom presentations, the better my pedagogy and the more effective I would be with my students. So I was a member of our very first FTII team here at USFP, and Dr. Naomi Boyer trained us in many of the technologies, and since that time I've used them, I've been applying them in the classroom and found it to be very helpful, and also I've been able to impart this knowledge to students by actually using it in the classroom, and some of them are still more proficient than I am, but some of them come in and they're a little clueless with the kind of academic technology we use. So they are learning from the teacher and from other students as well. So it's been working quite well for us. When I first started with FTII, I felt I was a little green in the area. I mostly use technology for word processing and to make PowerPoint slides. And I really have come a long way since then. As a matter of fact, our USFP librarian tells me that I'm Dr. Boyer's poster child. So I have really enjoyed learning how to use the technology in my classrooms and both undergraduate and graduate level. And I continue going to the FTII training. I was a mentor my second year. And again, this year, for the third year, we have the workshops in the summer. And so I am a third year participant in FTII.
I hope that gave you a little insight to what they felt about the program. Dr. Boyer brought us into several of the technical services, and mine was media services, brought us in to train some of the faculty members on some of the classroom technologies. As she had already mentioned, we had a new tech building coming online, and each one of the classrooms had a smart podium. And none of the professors, most of them had not ever used a smart podium. Mostly those type of technologies, when you roll it in the room, you have a TV and a VHS deck there to play your video on, and that's all they'd ever been exposed to for the most part. In these podiums, these smart podiums, what we had, it's something similar to this, and what you have is a Crestron-driven technology. It's a touch screen. They had never seen that. We had to take them through that. Also inside, there's a DVD-VHS combo player. There's a PC in there. There's a digital document camera. There is a laptop hookup. So our challenge was to bring them in during this FTII and train them how to feel comfortable using this system when it was still very foreign to them, so that they'd be very comfortable in the classroom teaching. We also had, not only did we teach them the podium, but we had to teach them how to call for help. A lot of times a faculty member will be in there and a piece of equipment will go wrong, or something hiccups in the system, and we want them to be able to come to us and ask us quickly so that they can continue their class. We had to teach them how to, on the Crestron-driven instrument, it's just like what you see up there, there's a help button so that they can call right to our office, and either we can take care of it with our web interface or we show up in the classroom. We also had, in each one of the classrooms, we have a phone on the wall so that they can call us immediately that way. And we also have media personnel assigned to the classrooms prior to each faculty member going into their classroom. We tried to let them feel very comfortable about the fact that someone was roaming the halls, so they just had to go help out the hall, and we'd show up. We also had to, we couldn't put all of the technologies into the classroom, so we have to had some of the technology brought in as needed. So we taught them how to go on to our online requests and send them into the media center to get those, and we would have them put in their classroom for them, like a symposium, if you've seen them, the smart board symposium, things like this. I noticed after these sessions that we had with FTII that they were extremely comfortable with the podium. They operated the equipment very well. And what ended up happening was that we weren't called to the classroom as often. Because they understood the operation of the equipment, we saw a huge drop in calls to the Media Center helpline. All of these new technologies that were introduced during all these sessions were in these classrooms, and they seemed to be very comfortable operating, like the smart boards, the rear screen projection smart boards. Most people would look at it and freak out, but they were very confident. They got up then, they were touching the buttons, and I think the students in the class were, whoa, you know? And we also did we do video conference classes, and there was something there. If you don't connect with that site, you know, you don't engage that site, and soon you don't have that pedagogy going on. So we try to give them a best practices class to help them out with connecting with that site, things to wear, things to say, how to engage the students at the site, and so forth. And we taught them how to either, we have two different types of video conference systems. We have a standalone in the room where they operate everything with their remote control by themselves. So we had to teach them how to use that and feel comfortable with that. We also have another where it's a room like this where we have someone upstairs operating all the equipment for them so that they can just go on and operate their deal with their class and they don't have to think about the technology. So we brought them in and we gave them a choice on the technologies to learn as far as the video conference, the standalone or a single classroom.
So I'm the librarian. I do three sessions during the Institute, one about the library resources. I'm the first USF librarian on the campus. I've been there for 3 years. Before that, we had a joint use library with the community college. And some of the faculty members, they know some of the resources that are out there, like I really like JSTOR, and they don't really know anything else. So I bring them up to speed. We have 500 databases at the USF, so help them learn about the other resources that we have. Show them faculty services. I do a session on citation management systems. We use RefWorks. And then I also do a session about using the library resources for tenure and promotion. And some of the outcomes, well, because I think the faculty are learning about the other resources that we have, they're now more inclined of having their students learn about them too. So they asked me to come to their classes to teach information literacy to their students. And some faculty who had never had before asked me after the Institute now make such requests. More requests for help for the tenure and promotion packets. I show them briefly, and then they come back to me when they're actually working on their packets for the sites, how many sites do they have, journal rankings, things like how can I find out how many libraries have my book, et cetera, et cetera. The division directors, we call our departments the divisions, also come and ask me about that. More requests for help in digitizing media, as we have more and more online courses. Faculty will show video during classes, and now they want to do the same in their online classes. That brings up a whole bunch of issues, how to transfer the material, copyright issues, and all that. So since I was receiving more and more of those requests, and Dr. Boyer as well, so Dr. Boyer, Karen Conrath, and myself, we sat together, we set up a policy and process to digitize AV material. And finally, faculty have been developing more web quests as activities for their students. So I like to believe is they are now more attuned to all the information resources that are out there, more scholarly resources and information literacy for their students. Some outcomes for ERDC. ERDC stands for East Regional Data Center, which is a bit of a long name for our computing services, our unit. They take care of academic computing and office computing, et cetera, et cetera. So our IT unit. What they have found out is that institute graduates require far less basic help, level one help, calls to the help desk for the basic stuff. Their participation in the institute, decisions that they give, creates the opportunity to disseminate updated policies and procedures. How do I get the key card access to the classroom when I'm not scheduled for my class? Things, how do I get the laptop card? How do I reserve it? How do I check out certain equipment? It gives them the opportunity, of course, to present new technology. We got tablet PCs, so how do those work, et cetera, et cetera. Encourages participants to utilize resources readily available, and again, with the reduced need for assistance for them. And then finally, establishes campus-wide technology standards, helping bringing the technology skills of the faculty to a same level. So faculty may not have been hired with those skills, but they have the opportunity to develop them, and everybody has the same basic level of technology savvy.
Some of the outcomes from the faculty going through the FTII in regards to online surveys is we've seen a dramatic increase in the quality of the surveys. The surveys are more valid, more reliable, and less biasness involved. They also know when to use a survey and when not to. Also, the faculty have been able to recognize what tools we have available on campus. We currently use SNAP surveys, Qualtrics, and SurveyMonkey. And so they've been able to gain a good understanding of those tools and be able to use them. And when they do have difficulty, or if they want to have at least another pair of eyes, look at the survey and ensure that it's a reliable survey, they certainly get our help and seek our help. A significant increase in the number of surveys that have been used. And it's really been neat seeing how faculty have used the information from those surveys to help with their decision support and also improve their quality of their programs. And lastly, a better understanding of the IRB process and when to get IRB involved and when not to. Naomi?
Okay, so now we're probably at the most important part, and we've got 5 minutes left, so I'm going to go really fast, but this is the great time to just stop me and interrupt for questions. Overall, what are we seeing? Faculty are talking to one another across disciplines as a result of their work in this, because all of a sudden they realize that many of them are vulnerable in the same areas. Faculty, as we know, come in as experts, and they're experts in their content area, and it is very difficult for them to make themselves vulnerable to their students, to their colleagues, to the administration, and say, I don't know how to do something. And so what we're seeing is that they've come into terms with it, with their peers walking alongside them, and able to work together. They don't know it all, and that's okay, and that's hard. That's a hard thing to kind of get to, because they are taught to be experts in their field. But they're having conversations across one another. The fear is reduced. And when you reduce the fear of trying these tools, whether it's with students, without students, practice environments, they then begin to take some risks. The faculty member, one of the ones who was interviewed, who had never used a flash drive, who is really excited that she can put in a DVD and play music in her classes, is using CPS. Is now doing things that she otherwise never would have done. And in fact, she's my best salesperson for CPS. She's out there telling other faculty and demonstrating for other faculty how to do it. So once you reduce the fear, they then begin to take the risk in other areas. It provides the opportunity for self-reflection. Because they have to fill out that implementation reflection, they're reflecting on the process of what they're doing. We've seen a really big increase in the online course development. I have quite a number of faculty who are involved in that process that they otherwise came in saying, I'll never teach online. And we've really started to see a culture change where they're discussing it. They're not only doing this on our campus, but we mentioned we're part of a system. They take it back to the Tampa divisions. I'm getting calls from departments on the other campus where their academic department resides asking us for services for them. And there's programs over there, and there's really fantastic programs over there. But it just goes to show how the faculty are the best salespeople for themselves, and how they can get, once you start the buzz, it then begins to change. So where are we going next? We need more. We need more variety, because it's not just the faculty that need to get the fire. We need programs for our students. We're not there yet, and we need to work on that. How to reach those adjuncts that are on odd hours and perhaps not as physically available to go through these things. We're going to have to develop something to attend to their needs. And we've had to plan what's next for this group. We can continue this model probably for quite some time, but given at this point that we have 39 and a half faculty and we have 28 that have already gone through the program, we're going to run out. So what's next? What do we do with them next? And we need to dig deeper into that and find ways. We were given an award from the University of North Florida, and we've noticed significant cross-campus collaboration. My colleagues here and additional colleagues back on campus have been phenomenal in building the program and getting this to the point where it's institutionalized. It's one of those things now where everyone knows what it is, and those who choose not to participate We're now at that laggards of the innovation curve. The pressure's being put on them because we've really gotten to that middle zone now with this last group of participants. And so it's very interesting to watch how the pressures, you are going to participate next year, is what I'll hear one colleague say to another. And this last group, that's that middle group, everybody should have to do this. I don't have that philosophy. I think people need to volunteer, otherwise they're not going to want to be there. So it's really interesting to watch how the whole culture has changed. A little easier for us to move the mountain, though. Those of you who are very large institutions, it's a little harder to get that critical mass together so you can facilitate change. I think we made our time. Just quite. Any questions real quickly? Yes, sir. The question is the development of the technology skills being considered in their promotion and tenure case? No. The situation that we're in is a regional campus. The academic departments still reside on the Tampa campus. And so their colleagues in Tampa have not quite embraced technology standards quite as much as we have out in at the regional campus. And of course, as a polytechnic, it's very important to us as well. I mean, part of our mission is the applied learning, the applied research, and the applied technology. They're working really hard to make them see how important it is. I think locally, as far as their local evaluation, it is valued, but as far as the whole system, no, which is why that research component is so important, so they get those publications on their tenure case. Yes, ma'am. Yes, we do that through, and the question was, do we expose them to any effective teaching pedagogy? And I actually like to think along the lines of andragogy and some of the best practices. We model a bit in our sessions. We provide them, I hate to say it, I do kill a lot of trees. I provide them with very large notebooks with some supportive readings that go along with it. But we dig into some of Boyer's work. We dig into the scholarship of teaching and what that means and how they can assess that. As a campus, we're beginning to look at our own tenure and promotion standards, and they're then starting to assess how they can look at quality teaching and what that looks like. Because, of course, the quality teaching is important, but we have to capture that too. How do we capture that? How do we create a standard for us? And so it's, yes, we look at student outcomes. We talk about that. We talk about the technology is a large part of it, but we really try to focus on the learning outcomes and what happens with the learning. Thank you very much.
This EDUCAUSE 2008 Annual Conference Podcast is sponsored by Real Networks. Real Networks enables digital delivery of distance learning coursework, athletic events, and more to students anywhere. Information at realnetworks.com.